flying saucers are real.
They've seen the aliens buzzing our missile silos.
The UFO phenomenon, either we like it or not, is already very much part of our reality.
That caused a compass needle to spin and spin.
And that's where the whole seed for the idea of underground bases at Dulce was planted.
They had very large eyes, and you know, I found their stare extremely difficult to bear.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podcast UFO. I'm Martin Willis, your host. Michael Lowe could be joining us in a moment. Today's guest after the news is filmmaker, author, and much more, Craig Campobasso. A few announcements today. I'm always looking for sort of smart ways to grow this show. And starting next week, our show will be broadcast on like an affiliate. It's an internet radio station every Friday at 9 p.m. EST, which is Saturday, 1 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time. And the internet radio show is all1broadcast.com. So that's all the number one broadcast.com. The good news is I will be doing a live show once a month. The time and date is not set, and that show will be put on our podcast site as a bonus podcast. Nothing's really going to change for you as a listener. However, I will be in a chat room at 9 p.m. Friday every showtime so you can interact. I'm real excited about doing the live show because that will be with us taking calls from listeners and also with a guest each time. And that's once a month, and I will keep you updated on that. The show will be 55 minutes, pretty much. That's the only real change that I can think of. We may possibly have a sponsor and have one 30-second commercial of some kind at some point. Nothing is set right now. And you'll get an additional podcast. So a couple of other announcements. I want to thank you, Phil, again, for helping out with the North Carolina trip for the symposium. I'm leaving this afternoon. I'm really excited about that. Still could use some help. We have a donation button right on our podcast site, podcastufo.com. Peggy's doing a great job managing our Facebook page. Thank you so much. And Thomas Kennedy, he's kind of special to us, as he is number 5,000 to like us on Facebook. This just happened 2 days ago. What do you think about that, Michael?
They like us. They really like us.
Yes, that's right. And, you know, I asked Thomas Kennedy if I could have permission to say his name. And, you know, I haven't heard back from him.
And he said no.
He may have. Hey, Michael, I know you're on vacation next week, so there's absolutely no news in our podcast next week. So that means I have to stretch it out to 55 minutes somehow. How are you doing? What's up for the news this week?
Neighboring star has three Earth-like planets. On June 25th, it was announced that Gliese 667c, which is only 22 light-years away from Earth, has three planets in the so-called habitable zone that should allow for liquid water. Further analysis of the data collected from the system suggests that there are six, possibly seven planets, and that two more may also be in this habitable zone. The find, of course, is doubly important as the system is so close to us and the only known system to have so many planets in this habitable zone.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. It's only 129 trillion miles away, which is 207 trillion kilometers. And, you know, the thing comes to mind, if they're all habitable, I'm wondering if all the planets could possibly be inhabited by intelligent life. And if they are they tribal and trying to blow each other up? Or are they not tribal?
Or, you know, even if only one real civilization grew up, you know, imagine how different things would be for us if Mars was something we could that had an atmosphere we could just go and live in, or liquid water that was easily available. I mean, either way, it could be a real incubator for a civilization.
Yeah. Who knows what point they are, how long that solar system has been established and all that.
All I know is that if I were SETI, I'd be swinging my telescopes around right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
The three Chinese astronauts on the Shenzhou 10 mission have returned safely to Earth. Although they have only sent six craft and 10 astronauts into space, the Chinese were using this mission to lay the groundwork for a space station they want to have in orbit by 2020. We've linked to official Chinese news service coverage, but don't worry, it is in English.
That's pretty close. Would you say 2020? Because they're just starting this space exploration themselves. I mean, that's very ambitious, I should say.
You know, I think they've only been launching astronauts for about 10 years.
Right.
So everything's easier the second time, as they say. Yep. Or the third.
Yeah.
June 25th also saw the discovery of a new crop circle in the UK. This particular circle, which I feel looks vaguely like a Mexican wrestling mask, is only a short distance from Silbury Hill, a prehistoric artificial chalk hill. We've linked to the UFO sightings daily coverage of the circle for our listeners who are into crop circles. What do you think about crop circles?
I'm really on the fence about crop circles. You know, I mean, I do think that a lot of them are this one definitely looks man-made to me, if you ask my opinion. But, you know, they could be part of this phenomena that, you know, Thomas Fusco was talking about in the last podcast that we had. And I should have asked him what he thought about them. You know, there are some that are mysterious and they have appeared in very short time. Who knows? It's another who knows is what it is.
I agree. Something keeps me from entirely buying them, and they definitely can be faked to a certain extent. I mean, that's been proven. But, you know, I always find myself looking at the pictures when new ones come out.
Some of them are absolutely beautiful, really. You know,
and this one looks like a Mexican wrestling mask.
It does. You're right. I mean, I did look at it. You're right. It's pretty. Maybe that's what it's modeled after. Maybe the aliens are getting into watching wrestling on their TV or something.
You know, we can't pick and choose what television broadcasts are making it across the cosmos.
That's right.
UFO evidence from the final Apollo mission. UFO Sightings Daily also brings us an odd image from the Apollo 17 mission, which shows something very strange in the lunar sky. Oddly enough, it seems to show another camera aiming directly at this unidentified object. You can check out Scott C. Waring's thoughts on the image, as well as the link to the original NASA post of the JPEG, through the link to UFO Sightings Daily coverage in the show notes. Did you have a chance to see that picture?
I did. It really is some type of weird anomaly. It almost looks like a mask, too, like almost like Darth Vader's mask or something. Maybe that's what it is.
Craft is not like the first thing that came to my mind, but it's something odd. It was a very strange photograph.
Yeah, it looks like almost something like an electrical anomaly of some kind, or who knows?
If there's one thing I've learned from Star Trek, it's that the clouds of energy are always the most dangerous aliens.
Ah, that's what it is. Did they make it back from 17? They made it back, didn't
yes,
they?
Yes, perhaps. But everything after that was suddenly canceled. That was not meant to be the last mission. We were supposed to go through 20, but all of a sudden they just put the axe in the program after 17.
Oh, wow. Yeah, they didn't want to see any more of that crap.
That's right. And finally this week, the last batch of British UFO files were released. The UK closed its Ministry of Defense UFO desk in late 2009 because it felt there was no real value resulting from the use of resources. However, in the time just before the desk's closure, there was a marked increase in UFO sightings. We've linked to the British Archives site, as well as a press release from Robert Hastings, in which Nick Pope suggests that the move to release files was not simply an effort by the MOD to provide the public with all the information available. Now, Martin, I'm sure you have some thoughts on this.
From what I understand, the documents that have been released were unclassified at this point. It seems like, you know, they're like cleaning house, closing up, but who knows? I'm going to sound like a conspiracy theorist again, but they may be hanging on to some classified stuff. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, I that's always the problem with these freedom of information, and I know that's not what it's called in the United Kingdom, but it is a similar piece of legislation. Is that there's always the provision that, hey, if it's still important, you don't have to release it. So you never really know if you've gotten the whole file cabinet per se, or just a few cherry-picked pieces. If, let's say, Roswell, and I know that's going to just incense people that I bring that up, but let's just say Roswell actually did have an alien body. And I'm not saying there's evidence, or this is hypothetical, so everybody take a deep breath. If that were the case, that very well could still be classified. That very well could still be considered some kind of national security secret, particularly if it crashed because some other crazy aliens shot him down, or we shot him down. So if that's the case, then it's exempt still from the Freedom of Information Act. And I think we have to remember that with everybody when they release these files.
I'm taking everything you just said as the gospel truth, by the way.
You know, that's really the best way to take everything that comes out of my mouth.
Absolutely. Well, hey, Michael, is that it for the news?
That is it for the news. I will see everybody again in 2 weeks. I am taking vacation next week, but I will be leaving you with a blog post this week on Dr. Frank Strages and the Venusian commander Val Thor, which I think everybody should read because it is a crazy story.
Absolutely. Thanks, Michael, and I'll see you in a couple weeks.
All right, great. I'll talk to you then. Have a great show.
All right, have a great vacation. So how you doing, Craig?
Good. How are you?
Great. Good to have you on. You're a filmmaker, and you're also an author, right?
Yeah, an author and casting director of 30 years. I put actors in movies and television. So I've been doing that for 30 years. And then, you know, also do filmmaking and wrote a book called The Autobiography of an Extraterrestrial Saga, I Am Tyron, T-H-Y-R-O-N. And on top of all the other good stuff.
Yeah, and there's a movie I want to talk to you about called Stranger at the Pentagon.
That's correct.
Yeah.
It's from the book called Stranger at the Pentagon that was originally written in 1967 by Dr. Frank Strages, who met with a created being who was actually living at the Pentagon for 3 years. He met him on Christmas Eve, 1959. That's how it all, you know, that's how it all started. So, but this created being whose name is Valiant Thor actually came here in March 16th, 1957, met with President Eisenhower and Vice President Richard Nixon. A created being is like an angel in human form. So it's, you know, everybody who met this man, Valiant Thor, got this incredible feeling from him, and immediately everyone was just put at ease. And Eisenhower put him on VIP status for 3 years, where he lived and worked at the Pentagon. And he departed 3 years later on March 16, 1960. But his original purpose for coming was, you know, coming with a divine design to eliminate sickness, disease, and poverty, and to prolong life. And it was, you know, he gave him a detailed manifest, which I don't know what was in the manifest, and Dr. Frank didn't know what was in the manifest, just the gist of, you know, what I just said. So over that 3 years, you know, they were pondering how they were going to, if they could implement it, et cetera. I do know Dr. Frank did say that they were, Nixon and Eisenhower were for it, but in the end they did turn it down because they said it would eliminate hospitals, doctors, nurses, and send the economy into a tizzy. So
you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
I mean, well, you know, it kind of goes, you know, kind of goes along the same lines. Like, if all of a sudden someone did invent free energy, you know, it would devastate the economy, you know, and take a long time to correct itself. You know, it's a bad thing initially, but a good thing overall, like a long term, you know.
It is, and if you go back to the time when Edison and Tesla were doing it, Tesla had free energy, and everybody chose Edison, which you know, promoted money and greed, and free energy would have been for everybody. So, you know, so there was a choice at a certain point, you know, on the planet, but it went the other way. So hopefully soon it'll go, you know, towards the free energy. But, you know, just for people who might be a little skeptical, you know, of this kind of stuff, there's a congressman, McElroy. It's on the internet. If people go to my YouTube page, which is Craig Campobasso, you can see the video. He came out and said that he actually saw documents that Eisenhower met with extraterrestrial beings back in that time period. And then, as you know, the Canadian who came out and basically just gave disclosure. There were also people who, Steve Bassett's disclosure hearing, which was last month, also came out and confirmed that Eisenhower was meeting with extraterrestrials, several races, not just one, not just Ian Thor. But but I think everybody pretty much, I think most of the planet believes that there's life elsewhere. I mean, you can't believe that in all of creation this would be it, you know.
Yeah, so is your movie based directly on that book all the way through, or do you...
It is, yes. It's uh-huh. based on Stranger at the Pentagon. The movie is the short film. We're doing the short film first. Being a filmmaker, what they do in these days, you know, back in the old days, George Lucas would go and pitch, and when he initially pitched Star Wars to the studios, they had no idea what he was talking about. So he literally had to go and hire airbrush artists to create all of the machines and to create what the landscapes were going to look like. And he did these, you know, giant sort of paintings for them. And once they saw that, they greenlit it. So nowadays, I was one of the casting directors on Sky Captain and The World of Tomorrow with Jude Law and Angelina Jolie and Gwyneth Paltrow. That film was an independent film that was created, the script was written, and then a short film was done, and then the money was raised from the short film to see the vision. The same with the sci-fi movie District 9, and also the same with the Saw movies. They also, you know, they had one. So it's now, so instead of going and pitching your movie and saying, you know, this is what it's going to look like, you show them what it's going to look like, and then they know that you're a good filmmaker. You know, by the way, all of these short films are on YouTube that I just mentioned, Sky Captain, The Saw, and District 9. So if anybody wants to go check it out, you can. And to just back up a little bit is I was very close to Dr. Frank Strangis. I met him in 2001. We became fast friends, and I ended up writing the script over several years and sitting with him and listening to all his stories because, you know, he not only, you know, met Valiant Thor back in 1959, but when Valiant Thor and his crew and fleet came back in 1961, Dr. Frank, Valiant Thor came and met with him again, and then he was invited to actually go and visit Victor 1, which holds up to 200 people, in 1968, was his first time on board the craft. And anyway, I know it sounds a little out there for people who are just listening to it, but...
Yeah, I was going to talk to you about that. It does.
Yeah.
And, you know, and
well, it does to me when I even talk about it.
Yeah. So what convinced you that the doctor was straight with you with all of his stories?
Well, you know, first of all, you know, people can also, you know, they can get the book and they can judge for themselves. There are actual photographs of Valiant Thor taken by an Air Force photographer named August Roberts. And when you look at these photographs of him and you see this being in perfect form, I remember seeing the photographs the first time, and I just got this vibrating, unbelievably glowing energy when I looked at the photograph. And I just, you know, when people read something, you either believe it or not. I believed it. You know, but I didn't think anything else of it. It wasn't, you know, anything like that. I hadn't even thought about it. But the most interesting thing was when I actually started writing the screenplay, I had when you have a lucid dream where you're dreaming and you wake up in the dream and you know your spirit is somewhere else and you're actually having an experience in your spiritual body, but your body is still, you know, in your bed. I don't know if you've ever experienced that. A lot of people I've talked to have experienced that. I had that and saw and talked with Valiant Thor, who showed me the whole path of the movie, you know, showing me even as much as the sound stages and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Now, I thought it was cool. Anybody can say, you know, that's a dream. You know, it could be a dream. It could be, you know, whatever. But as I wrote the script, I actually felt like I connected to each and every one of the characters who was on board Victor 1. By the way, there are blueprints to Victor 1, which is they're called the Victor class fleet. There's about 300 of them. They're about 200 feet. I mean, they're 300 feet in diameter, and they hold up to 200 people each one. In the book, it does tell you where they're all stationed in and around the Earth. And the actual artist rendering and the blueprints to those you can also see on the website, strangeratthepentagon.com, if you just sort of toggle through the pages and all of that. This book has been sort of a giant UFO classic book, you know, in the underground for a very, very long time. But the one thing that convinced me the most is when I was actually writing my book, I Am Tehran, when I would meditate, I would actually connect in with higher or more advanced energies and souls, and I would literally sometimes see beings not from here, but they were master teachers, and they looked just like us. And there was a woman that I connected with, and this was way back in the 90s. I just remembered what she looked like, and I knew that she was around because I could feel her energy. You know, I don't know if you've ever experienced that, but when I met Dr. Frank, it can't come to know that she was actually a member on the crew of Victor 1. She's not written about in the book at all, by the way. She's a vice commander on the craft. There's four vice commanders. There's Vice Commander Dawn, Teal, Thon, T-H-O-N-N, and Zan, Z-A-N-N. And when I started writing the script, I started feeling this woman again, and I was feeling her gregarity. I mean, when I would write about her, I could feel her transfer her feelings to me. And I could feel each and every person do that. And it was, you literally cry because it's such a beautiful experience, because, you know, they're fully conscious beings. We're still in duality. We're fighting our way up the ladder to be fully conscious beings. I started feeling her, and Dr. Frank had come back from Victor 1 at one point and said to me, you know, that Teal said to say hi. That woman's image again popped in my head. So I thought that was interesting. You know, and but then the thing that really convinced me was a few years after that, I had eaten some food, and I ended up having a very bad bowel obstruction. I was rushed to the doctor, where they kept me there all day, and then they actually rushed me in an ambulance to the hospital because they were going to have to do surgery the following morning. Only one person took me there, a friend of mine, and then, you know, followed the ambulance down. And that night when I was asleep, I woke up in my sleep and I could feel bubbles going through my intestines. And I felt and saw this woman again in my mind. And when I woke up in the morning, Dr. Frank was sitting at my bedside, and he said, "Teal called me early this morning and told me she fixed you up last night." That's what convinced me, because then when the doctors came, they did x-rays again, and everything was fine.
You said that you knew Dr. Frank for many years.
Yeah.
Did he get a lot of ridicule for his stories?
You know, for the most part there, I think it was all pretty much positive. You know, you have to remember, he was in the group back in the day, which was George Van Tassel, George Adamski, all these guys. All of these guys, you know, people don't realize this, but George Van Tassel used to hold UFO space conventions out at Giant Rock in the Yucca Valley.
Oh, yes.
And there would be between 5,000 to 10,000 people attending at a time. And Dr. Frank and all of those early contactees were all a part of that. So they were all ridiculed, you know, at certain things, at certain times, and, you know, throughout. But then there was a lot of positive, you know, stuff that also came about it. You know, nobody, I don't think it, you know, nobody's going to totally believe everything. You know, when I say, you know, I'm doing this because I think it's a fascinating story. It doesn't matter your belief in it or not. I'm not here to convince you that it's true or not. It's left up to your own judgment, and that's the way that I'm tailoring the film. You know, so it is left up to the viewer, for them to say, to think if it's real or not, and if they're having, you know, or they might start to have their own experiences if they're open to it.
Mm-hmm. Before you met Dr. Frank, did you have a real interest in this type of thing to begin with?
Well, when I turned 26, I had a major spiritual awakening, and when I had that awakening, I became quite interested in all of this, and so I really, they just sort of delved into it. And, you know, back then we didn't even have the internet yet. So It was like going to the Bodhi Tree bookstore, you know.
Yeah.
So, the internet's so great because all the tools are there for everyone. So, you know, you can pop it online and it's out there for the world to see. So,
Michael Lauk, that does the news, he also does articles for our website, and he is writing stories on the early UFO people. We're probably going to be writing on Dr. Frank soon, and perhaps we'll try to have it up the same time your podcast is live.
Sure.
We have George Van Tassel up there now on Great Rock, and it's all interesting, the very beginnings of, you know, when all the major sightings happened, and in the 50s,
yeah.
There was a lot going on in the 50s, and Eisenhower's name keeps coming back into, you know, the mix when it comes to all this.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And, it's a fascinating era. The only guy, there's one guy left from that era, Bob Short, and he's in Arizona, right outside of Sedona. He was from those early days there as well. But, you know, they're all gone now. So Dr. Right. Frank left the planet in 2008. Right before him, Howard Menger left. I think Connie, his wife, is still alive, but I'm not sure.
Well, it's a fascinating era. And, you know, I mean, the whole contactee movement is pretty interesting, too.
It is, and I think what was really cool about it back then is that the beings from these other places who were coming here, it was new to them, so they were really open to sitting and conversing with people from here, and they chose the ones that were open, you know, whose minds were open. That's why Dr. Frank, you know, was chosen, because his mind was open, and that's what I always thought, back then is, George Van Tassel was having his contacts out there, when he lived, him and his family lived under Giant Rock, you know, out in the Yucca Valley. He ran the airport there, and,
right.
you know,
mm-hmm.
they had a little... you know, a little hamburger and pie shop there where Howard Hughes used to fly his airplane in, and because he loved his wife's pies.
Wasn't there, like, no one around, too? I mean, Wasn't there like 50 people and like 100 miles or something?
In the middle of nowhere. It's really fantastic. I actually know the ladies that own the Integratron now. And so when Dr. Frank was alive, we went there many times, and he walked us through everything, and how it used to be and where it was. And, yeah, it was really, really quite exciting. So, and by the way, for your listeners, Stranger at the Pentagon, the book is no longer in print. It's if people would try to buy it on Amazon, it's $100 to $300. There is another book called Outwitting Tomorrow, which was written by Valiant Thor and Dr. Frank, which people all over the world are always trying to find. That's been out of print and you can't get it. And then there's another Dr. Frank book called UFO Conspiracy, which is out of print. So, the publisher actually gave me the remaining copies of all of those books. And on the StrangerAtThePentagon.com website, we're still trying to raise money for our visual effects. So people can make a small donation and, they can get a copy of Stranger at the Pentagon. I'll sign it for them and get a downloadable copy of the movie for a $25 donation. So,
wow.
And you can, we're giving great gifts away and, for not a lot. And you can get all those other books as well, even the posters of Victor One and the poster of the Starship, which you can't get anywhere else but through the website. So, and I'll sign all of them because someday they'll be, someday they'll be cool little collector's items. So, there's different tiers, so people can just toggle through it and email me, and we'll get them the goodies out. So,
all right. So
it's really exciting.
Yeah, so why don't you say your website name?
It's StrangerAtThePentagon.com.
Well, hey, easy enough.
Yeah, that's really easy, and then they can just click on Help Fund Short Film. And if anybody's interested in looking at the autobiography of an extraterrestrial saga, I Am Tehran, which is about the program coming out of Melchizedek to raise consciousness on planet Earth. And it's all about duality and bringing Earth into the fold of universal society and how that's all taking place at the moment, done through a wonderful storyline, but also it's fully illustrated. And Sylvia Brown actually wrote the foreword, the author. She's written 68 best-selling books. Wow. So that website's autobiography of unanet.com, and you can read the foreword there by Sylvia and see all the artwork in color if you just toggle through the pages as well. So
great.
So thank you for letting me do a shout out to all of that.
Certainly. All right. So hey, thanks so much for joining us today. It was a lot of fun.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you very much. Really had a good time.
This was not my first space flight. Previous assignments for my newspaper had sent me to the moon many times, but never into the vast reaches of deep space.
What's the matter, Sonny? Are you scared?
Bye.